Hi, and thanks for downloading the Daily Connect podcast. Now to a subject that is close to a lot of our hearts, and that is refusals to public places with guide dogs. This is happening more and more every single day, and it's annoying a lot of blind and partially sighted people out there who just want to get out and about and enjoy the world around them, whether it be a restaurant or just getting into a taxi. Well, joining us on the line shortly is Laura Fatchie and Sam Little, who talk about their experiences of guide dog refusals. But first, Sean Dilley, a blind news reporter, tells us about the legal side of guide dog refusals.
Though you can't hear it, around me is power personified. Just 200-300 yards away from the House of Commons and the Lords Chamber, where the Equality Act 2010 was passed, it rolled all sorts of legislation into one, including the old Disability Discrimination Act. Now, there's a bit of an incongruity between the fact that if I am refused a taxi or a minicab here in Westminster, that's a criminal offence, and around the country. If I'm refused access to a restaurant, it's not a criminal offence. Yep, believe it or not, the law places a duty on businesses to make a reasonable adjustment, and it doesn't specifically say that a guide dog has to be allowed. That's just the way the courts generally tend to swing that way, because they need to make a reasonable adjustment in reality to allow a guide or assistance dog in most cases. So that's the legals. Obviously, if you get refused a cab or a taxi, you can go to your council, they'll help deal with it, or Transport for London if it's in London in the capital. But if you get refused to a restaurant, then really you are on your own. You know, Guide Dogs is a fantastic charity. It's life-changing. I'm a very proud volunteer with Guide Dogs, but there's only so much the charity can do there as well, because the reality is that there are just so many access refusals, and engagement officers up and down the country, up and down the United Kingdom, are dealing with these things all the time. So in reality, it's all about empowerment and us dealing with that, which, you know, to a degree means that we can end up banging our head off a brick wall trying to deal with something that is deeply upsetting, that the law is not entirely clear cut upon, even though it should be, and something that would cost us fortunes to deal with. And I'm aware I'm recording this, I can hear the frustration in my own voice. I've probably had about 100 access refusals in my 19 years of guide dog ownership. Though the interesting thing was, I went into a local branch of a fast food restaurant at King's Cross the other day, and a security guard told me, no dogs. I said, it's a guide dog. He said, well, I'm just doing my job here. I said, well, do you understand? I can't see it's a guide dog. Yeah, I know, but the rule here is no dogs. I don't advocate this course of action to anybody, but I just said, look, fella, I don't want to fall out with you personally. I think I'm bigger than you. I'm not going. And the customers, they leapt into my defence and they said, look, this is ridiculous. And I was just saying to him, look, have a heart, forget what the law says. And I honestly don't think that people understand how it feels, unless you've had it, to be discriminated against in this way. And then the danger is that even raising these things makes people seem as if you're the troublemaker. And that's what I'd like to see end. I'd like to see a very clear system of accountability, where if you are refused, it could be looked at under a law that's clear cut, unlike the moment, which is as clear as mud.
So that gets our conversation underway on the subject of guide dog refusals into taxis, into public buildings, into shops, restaurants, whatever. With me now to discuss this in more detail is Laura Fatchie and Sam Little. Both of you have experienced similar experiences in being refused entry. I'm going to start with you, Laura. You experienced this getting off a plane in Edinburgh, I believe, trying to get a taxi.
Yeah, flying up from Manchester, and we went to the taxi company office to pick up the taxi, and fortunately we were in a really good environment where the employers of the taxi driver who refused to take me, they were that shocked and disgusted that they suspended him on the spot, and there was so many people who stepped in and said, look, we'll take you, I'll take you in my taxi, and you know, the outrage on my behalf was so kind of encouraging, and actually it could have been a much more upsetting experience. I have in the past been refused access to restaurants, and it was a lot more upsetting that time than this most recent refusal.
Okay. Sam, let me bring you in. Tell me about your experience of access refusals. You've, in fact, made a video about it.
Yes, so I'm very new to the world of guide dogs. I've only had my guide dog Ziggy for a year, and he's my first one. And just very recently, I experienced my third taxi refusal in the space of less than a year. So I decided to use my platform as a contributor for BBC The Social to make a video about it, because I just felt like, you know, it was ridiculous in this day and age that this was still happening. And the response is amazing. As Laura says, I think the majority of people are usually enraged and disgusted at this type of behaviour. And I, too, myself, has had the support of fellow taxi drivers who have experienced, you know, witnessed the situation and have jumped in to help. But it, at the end of the day, it's still happening. But I do feel like the more awareness that's been raised with the help of social media and people like ourselves talking about how it makes us feel and the impact it actually has on us will hopefully make a huge difference. But like Laura says, unless you're in the right environment where people are witness to what's going on or can help you deal with the situation, it's really, really difficult to prove and move forward.
Sean Dilley is a broadcaster. Sam, you work in this world as well. You work for the BBC, as you say, in the social side of things. Also, you know, Laura, you are a very successful Paralympian. I mean, we're not all shrinking violets here, are we? And you know, dealing with this must be rather frustrating, Laura, especially for you. I mean, this was your first experience of Edinburgh, I believe.
Oh no, not my first experience.
Oh well, that's good. that's what I read. Okay.
What I found. I was very shocked by it in Edinburgh, because generally when I have been there, it is an extremely guide dog friendly city, and I've never encountered anything like any sort of refusal problems before. But I think social media is great for us, because we do use a lot of social media, and making people aware of what's going on has. You know, the response is great from social media, and the more I do wonder whether the more it happens to people who have access to social media, the more we can raise awareness, and hopefully, you know, I mean, it isn't nice for us to have to experience it. It does make you feel a little bit, you know, it hurts, to be perfectly frank. It does hurt to be refused, but also I think we have a duty as people who have a bit more power over social media to bring people's attention to it. And
is that the answer, Sam? Is it about getting us, you know, more awareness of this on social media, almost to the point of shaming people who do this, or shaming companies that let this happen?
Yes and no. I mean, I kind of have my own personal policy of if I encounter a situation like this, I try and deal with it locally, because I think a lot of the time it's just due to lack of education and lack of awareness. So, you know, for example, I got refused from a local supermarket, and the security guard kept asking me to leave with Ziggy, but I honestly think it was down to the fact that he had been told no dogs, was very new in his job at a security guard, and it was almost like he'd never seen a guide dog before. But I honestly think it was because nobody had, when he'd been trained for his job, nobody had said, well, whilst we don't allow dogs in our stores, we do allow assistant dogs, and educated them on the different types of dogs that are allowed in supermarkets by law in the UK. But there does come a point where it's happening so often, and you just feel like, well, the only way to do it is to shout out to the world, this has happened to me, this is not good enough. And, you know, while shaming doesn't sound like a very nice thing to do, at the end of the day, they should be ashamed, because not only are they breaking the law, but they're discriminating our disability against us. They're preventing us from leading independent lives. And they should be ashamed of that. But I don't think it's down to shame. It's also the legal side of it and company policy side of it. They have to have procedures in place. So, for example, the taxi driver who refused Laura, he was suspended on the spot. So there needs to be a zero tolerance policy towards it. Can't just be like, oh, we're really sorry, we'll make sure it won't happen again. You know, they need to know that it's wrong, it's illegal, and they cannot do that, especially when it comes to taxis.
We're discussing guide dog refusals on the Daily Connect today. If you want to share your thoughts on it, then please do radio@rnib.org.uk or give me a call here in the studio. Have your say on 0345 602 0025. Laura Facci, MBE, and Sam Little are with me today discussing this. Just before we sort of stopped there discussing this, we were talking about this whole naming and shaming thing around companies. Laura, I wanted to get your view on this. Do you think that it's time that we stopped, as blind people anyway, being quiet about this and start shouting a bit more?
Yeah, I do. I think I'm on my second guide dog now, and so I've been using the guide dog for 12 years now. And my whole family, I've grown up with guide dogs around, so my mum's on to her six, and my two brothers have guide dogs as well. So we've got a lot of experience, and I don't remember my mum being refused quite so much when I was younger, and I don't know if it was just we didn't go out as much or what, but it seems to be getting worse rather than better. And I just feel that we need to start making people accountable for it rather than being quiet and letting it get on. Because I have done that in the past. I've just, you know, I've argued my case on the spot, but then I've never really done anything about it if it's not got anywhere in the past, and I'm fed up of it, to be honest. I'm just a bit fed up of being made to feel different, being made to, you know, not be able to just go anywhere I want with my guide dog, because that's the whole point of a guide dog. It's that independence. And I think people don't quite realise that they're not an accessory. They're not just a dog. They're there because we need them, we rely on them, and they you know, they allow us to live a normal life.
I completely agree with Laura. I mean, as I said, I'm really new to this. And, you know, the first time it happened to me, I think I was in such a shock that it actually happened, because I'd heard all about taxi refusals, but in my naivety, I didn't actually think it would happen to me. And then the second time, I was lucky that I had friends around me who, you know, took photos and gave of evidence and stuff. And then the third time, I had other taxi drivers around me. But it's just, you know, like Laura said, it's frustrating, because the whole point of having a guide dog is to allow you to live independently. So to constantly come up against these hurdles all the time, it's just ridiculous. And, you know, we're in the 21st century, we're in an age of awareness and, you know, more and more equality, and it just shouldn't be something that we have to deal with. So I do think it's something that we need to shout out a bit more. I think, you know, I know myself, I always try and keep the peace, and you just want to make things as easy as possible. You don't want to get in the way because, you know, you already feel like you're a bit of a hindrance. But I think we as ourselves, the people with disabilities and using guide dogs, we need to change that mindset. You have to think, no, we have a right to be here with our guide dogs and to use these services. And, you know, we're not going to put up with it anymore. I think we, you know, like Sean Dilly said earlier, you know, guide dogs are a charity, an amazing charity, and they can only do so much. So I think it's up to the rest of us to really step up and show our support and show our strength and show people why it's so important that we don't have to deal with these obstacles. So we can be independent and show that people can lead independent lives despite having a disability.
I suppose I'm coming at this from a slightly different angle, because I've just applied for a guide dog, so I'm just at that early stage in this process. And I guess it's something which I'm worried about. I am worried about it. It's something that's in my mind at this point. And obviously, Sam, from your point of view, you are fairly new to this. Was it in your mind? And is it something that would have, and would it now put you off continuing to have a guide dog?
I think if I'd had a better insight as to these types of situations when I was applying for it, I definitely would have thought twice, because when you're talking to people about getting a guide dog, it's not usually about those kind of things. It's about the personal benefit that a guide dog can bring to you and the independence that a guide dog can bring to you. And when you're learning how to use a guide dog, yes, the guide dog mobility instructor does go over these things with you. But like I said, until it actually happens to you, it doesn't really sink in like the effects that that can have. But I have to say, all the issues I have with having a guide dog, despite the many benefits it brings, is to do with the public awareness. It's to do with being refused taxis. It's to do with people coming up to touch my dog, despite all the paraphernalia that my dog is wearing. And I honestly feel if those things didn't happen, then my guide dog experience would be completely positive. But I would also say to you, as someone thinking about having a guide dog, that it does change your life. And you shouldn't let things like that stop you from having one, because hopefully the more people see people using a guide dog and it be, you know, a part of everyday life, the less that these type of scenarios will happen.
I find that really interesting. Laura, where do you stand on this?
I would never be put off having a guide dog. The benefit I find from having the dog, you know, the dog by my side on a daily basis is incredible. And as part of what I do, sometimes when I go away to race, I don't get to take my guide dog with me because I'm abroad. And if I'm out of Europe, I don't really like to take them long haul. So I'll leave them at home. And I miss having that independence at, you know, on my left arm all the time. And I just would, nothing would put me off having them because of the quality of life that they give me. I can understand why people could potentially be put off, but I hate to think that people, you know, ignorant people are winning. They're not. We need to just be more forceful with education, I think, and make people aware around us of what we expect from the public to treat the guide dogs. I couldn't imagine life without one.
Well, I think it's a very interesting conversation, and I look forward to people's views on this. If you have one, then, and I'm sure you will, then email us in radio@rnib.org.uk or call 0345 602 0025 or tweet us using the hashtag TheDailyConnect. Sam Little and Laura Fatchie, and also our contributor, Sean Dilley, thank you so much for being here.